Hello, and welcome to Dungeons, Dragons, and Discourse. With me is none other than Old Man Grognard.
Hi, folks. You do the counting. I thought you were Lawrence Welk.
Well,
three, two, one.
No, three, two. That's what you folks. You were not hearing that from the.
Thank
other side.
You very much.
But I was doing that before we logged in. I am Lawrence Denko, and we're going to have a great show here tonight, folks. Great show.
Who the hell knows what Lawrence Welk is anyway anymore?
Listen, the only reason I know is because I used to spend summers locked onto the single PBS channel that we had in the Poconos that came over the air. So you would catch the Lawrence Welk show and...
I never did because when I was young, we watched the original. And my mother... My mother had to watch Lawrence Welk every Sunday or Saturday.
I did not watch Lawrence Welk originally. I will say that.
Well, thank you very much. Now we have Larry Looper and the Lennon sisters. Anyway, that's my Lawrence Welk impersonation.
I can't do a very good impersonation. So I will. So Glenn. We could do a McLaughlin report. So, Glenn, Dungeons and Dragons, good, evil, kill the babies, go.
Go. I used to rate our shows on Wild Games Productions. I used to say that Save or Die was the McLaughlin Report of gaming, and Thaco's Hammer was the. What's that ESPN show with Terry Bradshaw and everything?
No, I know what you're talking about. I don't watch
sports. We were the ESPN of gaming because it was like a free for all.
Well, that's kind of. Listen, I hate to say it, folks. You're listening to the public access broadcasting. Of the OSR. No.
People like you. Thank you.
Yes.
Oh, by the way, I'm wearing dun-dun-dun.
North Texas number 10.
Yes.
The man, the myth.
My 10th anniversary.
The man, the myth, I've got the legend.
That's cool. Me. That's it. Yeah. But that, I think that was the last one Janelle did. Wasn't it the last logo Janelle did?
I think you are right. Now, I had the, unofficial North Texas shirt that I got on, I think, the Midnight Auction, which I was like, it's like a double or triple X. It should be fine.
It was fine until...
I had my congestive heart failure last year, and my neck swelled up to like a size like 23 or 24.
Randy says I need to go to North Texas. Yes, you do.
Yes,
we ready to be there in person.
Yeah, you really. How can I put it best? I go to numerous conventions during a normal year. North Texas, TotalCon, GaryCon, GameHole. ShireCon, and there are two that I will never miss so long as they're being held, and I can make it. Last year I couldn't make it, COVID and other crap.
And North Texas is one of them, right?
North Texas is one. North Texas, I might be a New Yorker, but North Texas is my home away from home. Yes, Randy, you can still go to the North Texas site. You can still register and
get games. And
you can still get the hotel. I was in a panic yesterday because I was like, oh my God, I didn't get my hotel yet. And it ends tonight because tonight's May 15th. It isn't May 15th, by the way. It was April 15th because I am.
I know that was funny to watch.
Yeah, I should have had a V8. So, but the special con rates are still in effect for another month. So I will be locking it down this weekend. Oh. But Texas and ChargerCon are the contacts.
Yes. By the way, what do you think of the glasses? These are my other pair of glasses.
It makes you look bookish. How's that sound?
Okay. Well, I got a new prescription coming, but I got to wear these until I can. The other ones were like, I was too, the other ones, I was too busy doing this.
Oh God. Yes. I know exactly. My good glasses, which I can't find, which probably means I need to get new glasses. My good glasses have those the invisible bifocals. So I didn't have to do too much of the.
Oh, the progressives? Yeah, I'm getting a pair of progressives because it's got to be better. Than, my eyes are just watering and going crazy with the line there.
Yes.
Anyway.
Randy, how many are they expecting? I believe, and get. My memory could be wrong. I don't think they've posted an official number. I think that they currently have somewhere in the vicinity of 250 people registered for the con. On a normal year, they max out at 450. I do not know.
Thank you, Randy.
What they're going to max out on this year?
Thank you.
As Mike discussed on the Wednesday night live stream, the hotel has a request that people wear masks. However, the state of Texas says no mask mandate, and you can enforce it. So they even said in an email to the con, we request masks be worn, but we can't do anything to actually. They can't even tell you put your mask on. So listen, I've got my two shots. The two shots of Feister, because I'm a
Me
Feister.
Too. Same here.
Feisty. We're feisty fuckers. We're going to beat your ass.
Feisty.
But
you went a little further than I was going to.
But. Well, you know, I married Irish, so I could be like that little Irish stupid, dumb schmuck ready to get into a fight and get my ass kicked. But I'm immunized. Glenn's immunized. Rachel's immunized. Listen, if I'm at a table and everybody at the table is immunized, I would certainly say, can we take our masks off? If somebody feels uncomfortable with that, that's fine. Then we'll, you know, but well, I think that it's important that if we follow CDC guidelines, remember, you can socialize. If everybody's immunized, you don't need masks.
And as far as like the table goes, they said you can wear a mask, you cannot wear a mask as long as it's like a unanimous decision at the table. I am going to say at my game, I don't want to wear a mask because basically it's hard to GM anything like this. You know, I'm doing the voices, I'm doing the characters and stuff, and you see half my face. You know.
But then, hey, you can always clear your throat and not have to cover it. You got the mask in front. Well, that's true. All right. Well, fuck it. You know,
the weird thing about wearing a mask when I have to wear a mask indoors is after, if I'm in there like 10, 15 minutes, I start drooling out of the side of my mouth. I don't know why.
Maybe you think that you're asleep. I mean, that's when I do my
job. I don't know. Yeah, I know. Anyway, North Texas. Yes.
Yes. Well, now, Glenn, you're going to be running, how many games are you running at North Texas?
Uno. One official game. I'm always up to say somebody say, "Hey, will you run some?" And if I'm able to.
See, that's you know, really,
they're gonna have the board there. I can post stuff.
I don't think I'm gonna sign up to play any games on the grid, and I don't think I'm going. Definitely not going to submit any games. However, I'm probably gonna come with my Swords and Wizardry Light rules. And have an adventure or two ready to run if somebody wants to do a pickup game. And if there are games that are pickup games that are looking for players, or if there are games on the grid that are short players, I'm happy to jump in. I'm not running the table for Frog God this year. This year, the Frog God will – almost everybody from Frog God will be at the con, but Frog God does not have a table. So I am not I am not tethered to the table this year.
Well, I'm running one. I'm signed up for one. So everything else is open. I signed up for one of Jeff Talanian's Astonishing Swordsman games.
Nice.
I'm running Gangbusters. And my game is probably full up already, even though it doesn't say on the chart because I screwed up in the number of players. I put four because I thought that was four tickets. So, and I had people already, can I come? Yeah, sure. I mean, I know you guys. Okay. And of course, Gage is going to be there.
The four tickets that were reserved ahead.
Yeah, it says number. It doesn't say players. It says tickets. And I always thought, well, is this for like just the half of the tickets they're going to sell? Or is this for the full table? I couldn't understand it. That's what I forgot to ask Bad Micah. Oh, and get this. I don't know what Gage is doing. I don't think he signed up for any games or anything. But I said, well, you know, you can always go up to a table. And if like, okay, you're short a player, can I play or can I play? Right. He won't do it. He says it's rude. I says, you don't ask, you don't get. You don't, you know, right. They can only say no, you know?
Right. I mean.
But get this.
But you can ask.
Becky agrees with him. My Monday game agrees with him. What the hell's going on? Doesn't anybody ask for anything anymore?
Well, here's the thing. When I won games at conventions, and now this again will have to depend a little bit on the convention, because if it's in a setting that there's no room at the table other than the designated seats, then there's probably one seat available, because I don't sit when I GM. I stand and I walk around. I think I probably took that from Matt Finch. I picked up that skill. But here's the deal. This is my feeling as a GM. My games are usually eight players, which means I have an empty seat, right? So that usually means I'm saying nine players. Right. I always allow walk-ups, and my deal has always been, if you can sit at the table, you can join us. But you can't, you're not going to sit in somebody's fucking lap. You're not going to push somebody out of the way to squeeze your chair in. So some conventions, the tables don't have that much space. You know, some of them are tight. But when I ran like GaryCon, I could have sat, I don't know, 12, 14 people at the tables that I had. And if you could find a way to get there and sit there, I'm happy with it. That's just the way I've always done it.
Randy, it's okay. He has to go. He's got game night with the wife and sister. Will you understand? Go for it.
Enjoy.
That's the thing. Walk-ups are, you know, at every convention, walk-ups are a way of life. I mean, I've spent in the early days when I went to conventions in California, the first few, I was afraid to go up and ask. You know how many games I played? Zero.
Right. Well, again, and that's the whole thing too. If you don't ask, it's an automatic no. If you do ask, you could get a yes. They might be short players, you know, or the GM might just be like, yeah, sure. Then again, if I can physically fit players at the table, I will. One North Texas, I think I ran with 11 or 12 players at the table. And that was great. Now, that being said, I had a story to tell from ShireCon a couple of years ago. We had ShireCon, everybody, you know, signs up for your games ahead of time. My thought was, I've got eight players. Rach wanted to play in it. I wasn't going to be sitting. She could have my seat. Gave me nine. Right. There was another GM. Go ahead.
No. You're telling. I want to hear your story.
Okay. Well, there's another GM who later, after the one day con, complained. I think it was on the forum or on the Facebook page, but made a complaint that there was a GM that had more than the allotted people at his table because he let his wife play, and there were slots at my game that needed players, and I should have gotten players from other people's tables. And that's not how it works, dude. It isn't a responsibility of somebody else to fill your table. And I think he was playtesting his own, whatever it was. So, no. I mean, listen. He would have been more than happy to jump into my game if he wanted to. I wouldn't have said no, but his table was right next to ours, and I guess he felt. And mine wasn't the only table running beyond capacity. There were others too that were running with 9 or 10, because
I mean, popular GMs
get extra people sometimes.
And you know, when you start asking around and you don't get the game, you start asking, word gets out at a con, because I've asked before and they didn't have. Like the first or second North Texas, I was trying to get into Jeff D's Villains of Vigilantes game, and unfortunately it was full. He wouldn't take any more, and I had some guy come up to me and says, hey, we got a low-level BX game starting upstairs, you want to get in on it? I said, sure. So people start approaching you. So it doesn't hurt. Asking is a good thing at conventions.
Yeah, everybody's there to play games, all right? And, people are happy to bring you into the fold. Extra players are always a nice thing if you can fit them.
Oh, yes. I also found out that I might end up running this game again, and by the way, I'm not the only one running Gangbusters there. Mark Hunt's going to be there, the guy who wrote Gangbusters BX. And he's also probably going to be running his Tall Tales Western game, too.
That looks like it's going to be a lot of fun.
BX Western? Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That's, in a way, actually, you're bringing me to a topic that I wanted to touch upon.
What's that?
When it comes to and in a weird way, believe it or not, I'm actually reading N-World. I'm actually finding content that I can read on N-World. So folks, don't
people still read N-World?
Yeah, and actually sometimes since they've gotten away from articles that were literally paid advertisement. And now they're actually going to like real articles. The quality has gone up. So it was a question. It was dealing with science fiction, but the topic, like when it comes to fantasy RPGs, right? Mm-hmm. The vast majority of fantasy RPGs, we have a certain default setting, and it's late medieval with Tolkien fairies.
A little bit of Conan mixed in there. And,
depending on what you're mixing into it, but there's a certain common faux history that we can feel comfortable with when it comes to fantasy. When it comes to something like American Westerns, we have not just things like watching Bonanza and all the other westerns that were on
movies in the 60s. Yeah.
But we have the spaghetti westerns. We have like The Unforgiven. I made Rach watch those last year, and she didn't think she'd like it, and she's like, oh my god. She goes, Goldilocks. It's Goldilocks. She's like,
Goldilocks.
it's part of the American legendary history. It's not true history, but it's become our
myth.
American,
it's our myth.
Our myth. Yeah, it's like gnomes and dwarves and elves over in Europe and those variations. This is our mythology. American mythology, the American spaghetti westerns, the West. So you can run a game like that, and your players are going to come to the table, and they kind of have an idea of what to expect, which is one of the reasons why I've always been amazed at how it's been such a, for the most part, Aces and Eights is out there. I understand that, but for the most part, it's an overlooked aspect of RPG.
It is, unless you're playing Deadlands.
Deadlands, yeah. But, I mean, not having a D20 / OGL set rule set, it's like, I'm surprised.
And again, there's a few good ones out there too, besides like Aces and Eights. There's Western Hero for the Hero System. There's you'll like this. It's what is it? Six Guns Six Guns and Wagons, and it's based off Swords and Wizardry Continual Light.
Oh, now that one I'm going to have to look up because, so I'm looking forward to see what Mark has. Maybe even if I get a chance to
play it. It's a good system.
I'm going to want to peek at it.
It's out on PDF. He's still working on getting a hard copy. I got a printed PDF of it. I like it. I think it's pretty good. I want to bend it into spaghetti western though somehow.
Well, that's it. The spaghetti western aspect makes it our legends. Now, when it comes to popular fiction, science fiction is one of the most popular genres out there, it's got a lot of movies and such. But yes, if you're gonna play science fiction and you know it's based on Star Trek, like you kind of know the default setting,
Star Wars.
Okay, but Serenity. But it isn't like we all know what fantasy is. Right, science fiction goes off in all these different directions.
You're right, but there is an except. Like the only exception I can think of, other than the like franchise stuff, like Star Wars and Star Trek, is the Traveler universe.
True, and Traveler was a game that when I didn't have the little black books. I had the starter set, and then I got the little black books afterwards. But Traveler, I liked the system. Although I found that the combat system was a little confusing coming from D&D. But I literally would scratch my head and go, D&D, your character's experience. There's no experience in Traveler. You basically start at with all the skills that you're going to have, but you're trying to accumulate power and influence and I guess ships. It's a different mindset when you're playing Traveler as written. So
and that here's another
head around.
Yeah, here's another thing. We discussed this before the show. I myself find it easier for me to run something like Dungeons and Dragons than something like Champions. As you know, I was a big Champions player, and people were saying, oh, it's great because it's based on the real world, and you can use real world stuff. And I said, well, I was having trouble with that. I know you can change it and hand wave stuff, but at the same time, if you're having a supers fight in a certain like municipal building and it isn't quite right, there's always people out there going, well, that's not really it, and all that kind of stuff. But in D&D, I can build it from scratch, and who's to say I'm wrong?
No, and that's legit. And therein lies part of the issue. When you're trying to run even if you're running a historical campaign.
Those are rough.
All right, so you want to run that's quasi-historical using the D&D rules or one of the OGL rules. Folks are going to, pick it out. Hey, this part is inaccurate. If they're
fast as Star Trek. Yeah.
I had the bridge simulation. I didn't have the actual RPG. I had the everybody plays a part on the bridge and it kind of fell apart. And space opera.
My game club at the time when it first came out, we did the introductory scenario, and I got to play Scotty. That was fun.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
But, Traveler expected you to make a campaign out of it because Traveler really set you up this default universe and machinations that are going behind the scenes and all this stuff. And it expected the players to become movers and shakers in that story, in that narrative. Mm-hmm. And it was hard to get because it was hard to get that up and running. I did better with Space Master, but that always ended up with a horrible death of everybody involved. I mean,
well, space is almost a case of too many choices.
Yeah, you have a three-dimensional sandbox, right? Even if you're running a sandbox for Swords and Wizardry or Labyrinth Lord, or AD&D 2E or whatever you're playing with, you know your players can go north, south, east, or west. Whereas when you're doing a space game,
you go up or down.
North, south, east, west, up, down, maybe your wormhole, maybe they're going to warp, and you're like, where's the limit? Where are they going to show up? So that becomes part of an issue. And I had this discussion actually with Greg Christopher, who is working on Ambition and Avarice, second edition, which I'm looking forward to. But as we discussed it, and he loves, why is Siri popping up? And she's going to say something. I don't know. But
Siri, meet Alexa. Alexa?
Yeah. Oh, God. No, no. The singularity is going to come together and we're going to explode. But,
excuse me. Alexa, exit. She just spoke to me.
Oh, there she is. Yeah. Glad mine didn't just turn off the lights or some crap like that. But when it comes to fantasy, what is the default adventure when you're running a fantasy game? Doesn't matter. Doesn't really matter what the system is, whether it's D&D or Rollmaster or
basic role playing or
basic role playing. In the end, what does it become? Even it becomes a dungeon. Even if the dungeon isn't defined by the walls that we would expect a dungeon to have, we could be outdoors, but you're still having these encounter areas that are kind of set in how you're going to get it. But science fiction is very open. So
you make a good point, and I totally lost mine. So.
Well, and here's the thing. When we had this discussion, and I was like, there's a game that, and I'll be honest with you, I have it in PDF. I haven't looked at it in years. I need to relook at it. It is Pay What You Want, but not just Pay What You Want in print. I'm sorry, in PDF. It's also Pay What You Want in print, which means you can pay just the cost of the print copy plus shipping. Hulk and Horrors, Basic Black Edition. And I love the fact that this is what they say. We are the surveyors. We explore the uncharted sectors of space and hunt these ruins for the treasures they contain and the riches they might bring to what sentient life remains. So basically, what are you doing? You're tomb robbers. You are dungeon delvers. But you're doing this in space. And that
you said,
brings back that ability, if you're a GM, to kind of control where the adventure is. Even if you're changing the default technology, you're still using the default mechanism of adventuring from fantasy RPGs.
Well, you said that, you're not delving, other than this, I mean, you were talking about sci-fi. What do you do for a dungeon stuff? Well, if you look at like John Ford's role-playing tip stuff, he's the guy who came up with the five-room dungeon, and they have expanded that into anything. Anything could be a five-room dungeon. It's just, think of it as five encounters. Think of, that way you can string them together. Right. So I his book, Five Room Dungeons, I even saw a couple of sci-fi scenarios in there.
Is it up on Drive-Thru?
Yes. Five Room Dungeons by John Ford, I think, or Role Playing Tips, either one.
Oh, okay. I thought you were saying John. I thought you were saying
Ford. F-O-U-R. F-O-U-R.
All right. I know who you're talking about now.
Yeah. But like I said, it's the Five Room Dungeon concept that matters, not the dungeon itself.
Right. So
that's a possible solution.
No, definitely. It is. And I mean, but just even, you don't have to run Hulks and Horrors to say, well, you know what, maybe I want to use Stars That Outnumber. And I can use the tag system and I can use Stars That Outnumber to do a fairly, I don't want to say contained, but a manageable sandbox. But maybe as a GM, you want your players to be in one area for a while doing something like scavenging or salvaging, because it lowers your prep time. I mean, when my prep time for like a fantasy game, even if I'm doing a sandbox in a fantasy game, you know, all right, how far can my group go? And maybe for those listening at home, so I got my hands together and I'm making a circle, and you expand it maybe a couple of inches, and that's probably how far you have to worry about in advance when it comes to your players in a fantasy game. When it comes to a fantasy game, you're fucked. They have a starship. It becomes as wide as my fucking screen where they could go, and in three dimensions. So that prep is
potentially... Well, remember, they can only go as far as you let them go.
Well, that is true. But then it becomes, we don't really have free will. We really can't.
Oh, nonsense. It's all part of pacing. You say they're at the planet they wanted to go to. They're at the planet they wanted to go to. Doesn't mean you can't do encounters on the way or anything like that. You know, distance is a bugaboo with me because I'm terrible at it. So I think of it as a pacing type of thing. Okay, how long will it take us to get to this village? Okay, about a day, and then how long you want to play that day for encounters or whatever. You just want to go, okay, you're at the village next day.
Right. Nothing big happened. No. Nothing exciting. You know. Yeah. That's
your prerogative as a game master.
Yeah. Well, that is true. And you know what? Part of the magic of becoming an effective game master is learning how to pace things. Yes. I was about to say less so at convention games, but you know what? Maybe even more so at convention games, because in your home campaign, you're thinking about pacing things over the course of multiple sessions. How is this going to play out over the next couple of weeks or months? Whereas in an expansion game, you got to figure out how you're going to pace out those 3 or 4 hours that you have allotted. Because if your players get through everything ahead, 1, 2, 3, now it's like, oh, well, all right, you did everything, and all right, what do you want to do for the next 2 hours? I brought Tiddlywinks. I know I haven't played it since I was 7, but
I usually let them go early. But you're right, but... That's one of my tricks is figuring out how much plot do I have? Okay, this is all part of me prepping the plot. Okay, here's the encounters I got. And of course, all this stuff changes when you get to the table because of the players. But, you know, I always have, and I talked about this in the last few episodes of Radio Grognard, I always seem to have one or two extra scenes in my back pocket that I can slip in there if they're going a little too fast or something.
Oh, that works.
And it's a matter of either I come up with additional scenes or in the course of preparing the adventure, I got so much stuff, I can take stuff out and not affect the pace of the game, but it's there if I need it. Because I know the people, like the people who are going to be playing my Gangbuster game, I know most of them. It's the Austin group. First time I played, I had a 2-part game, you know, so I had 6 hours. They ripped through it in 4. And so that taught me. That's what taught me. It's like, okay, I better have a couple of things in my hip pocket that I can pull out if I need it.
Right. Well, you know what? And that's it. I mean, there's when you're pacing for a convention game, you have to keep your players engaged. And by keeping them engaged, you got to keep things moving. So if your home campaign, if your players want to dilly-dally and spend half the session shopping, they can do that because you're going to come back next week or you're going to come back in 2 weeks. It's a campaign. It's just that they're actually helping you out. It's like, oh, wow, I can do less game prep next week because he only got through half the crap I wanted him to get through this week. Whereas a convention, you want your players, your group, to get to whatever the
goal is.
The end scene is. Mm-hmm. And you got to pace that. And if you have to watch your pacing too, because if it starts becoming, oh, shit, well, we're 3 hours in, We're wrapping up in 45 minutes, and they're not only halfway there. I got to start hand-waving shit from between here and there. How can I move things along to get them to that spot?
Well, let me give you...
David just has a comment. It depends on style of game. Our home games are very detailed and in-depth, and that's how we prefer it. And that is...
Yeah, that's again, right.
That's fine. So, but I think that home games pace can be slower or at least more variable because you're not you end it when you need to end it, as opposed to a convention where when you end it, it's over, it's done, it doesn't pick up. You tune back in next week, same time, same channel. Next convention.
I also have come up with over the years several like things that are a fact with or the things I operate with. Like if I'm doing a convention game, I will say that 2 to 3 encounters an hour. That's plenty an hour for a convention game. And it depends on how long it takes for them to do it. Also, I have my clock. I do that like a radio clock, only encounters. I do that sometimes. There's also something I came up with recently. Start with the beginning of your premise. Put something in the middle. Okay, they've gotten this far, and this is what's happening now, and the climax and end. And just leave those three open, and either when you're doing your prep, like filling in between them, or at the table, if you want to run that lean, you can go, okay, to get from A to B, from B to C, what would they do if they haven't suggested stuff already? Because players will suggest better stuff than you have.
Oh, and that's always awesome. And I always love taking those. It's like, oh, the players are
That's feeding. Why I say I have a, yeah, I, that's why I say I have a framework. I don't have a plot.
No, that's good. And I think that is an excellent, if you were, see, improv is not just a talent. It's also a skill. It's something that some people are good at naturally, but you can learn to be good at improvising in the midst of a game.
I used to have this argument with Vince. I said, well, I'll just fake it. I'll just, you know, I
fake
know
it,
where
fake
I'm,
it till you make
I'm
it. Gonna,
yeah, fake it till you make it. And I said, I'll just improvise. He said, and I said, I showed him my notes and things like that. And he said, how can you improvise when you're writing stuff down, your notes? I said, this is my improv. I know who his characters are. I know what they're going to do. I know where the story's going. I can riff off of that. But I have prep. He thinks like, I'm totally improvising it out of whole cloth. And I'm not really blah, 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 blah. You know, it's like, no, you do prepare to. He said, how can you prepare to improv? I just showed you how I prepare to improv.
Listen, improv GMing means that you need resources, okay?
Yeah,
now,
exactly.
Sometimes those resources that you have are you're going to prep for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Listen, I still remember when I was running a few sessions out in Long Island at the local game store when we had the old Thursday night group together. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, all right, so I'm going to be GMing. And actually, I didn't know I was GMing until I came in and found out I was GMing. But I had the deck of cards from, Inkwell Designs. So Inkwell Designs, he has a deck of cards out there. The dungeon, they're like dungeon encounters. It's like they're the small little dungeons. And I was like, all right, you know what?
Yeah, it's like dungeon dice.
Yeah, but there's actually, but individual cards have like a seed of a dungeon and a little map. So I said, guys, give me a second. And I took the cards and I dealt myself two cards so I could pick one or the other. Because sometimes one something expires and sometimes it doesn't. And I looked at them and I said, all right, I knew which one was expiring me. I go, all right, give me 10 minutes. They're like, what? Go outside, smoke it if you got it. And I go, come back in 10 minutes. We'll have an adventure. And I had
a great
3-hour adventure ready to play.
Wow.
You know, all because there's a, you know, that statue is actually going to be a column. It's going to come to life. Mm-hmm. What we have here. And again, when your players start going, I don't, I don't like that corner. There's something in that corner because, and I was like, oh, well, now there has to be something in that corner, doesn't there? You gotta,
yeah.
Maybe there just has to be. Maybe there wasn't, but now there is.
And that's this is the kind of stuff as a GM I live for.
Yeah.
You know, when the players do something and go off, it's like all other GMs kind of, not all of them, but a lot of GMs will panic if they go off the rails or if they do something you weren't expecting. I love it because they come up with better stuff than I do half the time.
Here's the thing. When players go a bit off the rails and they take you in unexpected directions, I find as a DM, that's when the game becomes entertaining for me.
Okay.
Because now I am being challenged. Now I have to show my skill.
Let me do a caveat for people who are watching and listening out there. If you're ever at my table, don't try and do it on purpose. He'll just pull something out of his butt. Yeah. He'll just pull something out of his butt. Let's just go crazy on this. No, come on, guys. You know, be fair. That's all I'm saying.
I'm going to pull the curtain back and reveal some Tenkar convention DMing secrets. When I run my own stuff, which I have done, I run my own stuff. It's my own adventure. I know it. I can improv it, and that's great. Also, I don't have to improv too much because, again, I know it like the back of my hand. When I ran Mouth of Doom, it was a 3D fucking adventure in front of people. They were going to metagame. If I took time to look stuff up, listen, I knew what was in the Mouth of Doom. I knew the flavor of it, but I also knew this is a published adventure from Rappahannock. If I go by the book, the potential of people are going to gain it. So I told them right away, hey, this dungeon level has been explored by other adventurers, so things might have changed based upon the records that you might have access to. And I changed things on the fly. The only thing I actually...
You change, you take away.
Right. Then another time, they had me running, oh, God, Teagle Manor. Now, Teagle Manor.
I remember that.
Now I had the. You saw the maps, right? The maps on the floor.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I was there. I was playing.
Yeah.
So remember, I had the crazy fighter with the sock puppet.
Yeah. Oh, geez, that's right. Yes. So here's
somewhere I have that. I still have that character sheet.
With Teagle Manor. Teagle Manor is not written as an adventure that a bunch of first level swords and wizard characters are going to survive. However, I knew what the level looked like. I knew the flavor of it. I knew the craziness of it. So I went with the craziness and went with the flavor and ignored what each of these rooms was supposed to necessarily hold. No. This is going to go off my players. But here's the thing, and it's the secret to improvising. I'm horrible at taking notes, but at the very least, if you start adding stuff that didn't exist before, give yourself a sentence or two to let you come back and remember it because your players are not going to forget. And then you're stuck going, I just made that shit up out of my ass. I don't recall this at all. No, make some notes at that time so you can go back and go, oh, when I made that crazy, one-handed dwarf. You know, that talked like a mad Scotsman. Oh, yeah. All right. Now I remember that encounter. If you don't do it and you forget, your players are going to bring it up. They want to go to revisit something of it. They're going to want to find, and you're going to be like, and they go back. That's not what he was missing his right hand before. Now it's his left. What happened?
I give him two hooks.
Yeah. Well, little did you know that his other hand was really a prosthetic the last time. How does he wipe it? Don't even ask those questions. It's a fantasy world. We don't need to go there.
Okay? Very easily.
Don't ask.
Okay,
don't tell.
Okay, should I drop some GM improv wisdom on these people?
Yes, please. Because listen, okay. And I'll be honest with you, Glenn. Just I pick up advice from every source. I'm never going to be the type of GM that's going to go, I don't need to learn anything else. Because you know what? The more
I'm tricks you have,
you need to have more tricks in that bag of tricks, because that's what makes the more the merrier, man.
True. This is stuff I've said on my own show before. I am a firm believer in benchmarks for whatever system you are. Benchmarks, if people don't know, is you find out what the average is as far as a character goes for stats and things like that. Stats, AC, hit points, and then you vary from that. For instance, you can't see this if you're listening, and you can barely see it while I'm showing it up, but I go stats, HD or hit points, AC, saves, level if it's important, and damage one, damage two. What that means is, like the stats, okay, I drew this from all the old early OSR versions of D&D. Stats are 9, okay? Hit points, I give an average, whatever that is. I'd find out what the hit die is and then give the average. AC and save, same thing for those stats. And that is my baseline right there. That's my baseline. And anytime I have to write up an NPC or something like that, all I have to do was put like hit points, average, AC, stats. If there's any variation, just write the stat that is unusually high or low.
Exactly.
Everything else is average. You know how I got that idea? Looking in monster manuals. Because if you look at a monster manual, look at its stats, that's the average monster of that type. And so you can vary from that. And I said, well, why can't we do this with like NPCs? I mean, I could probably write like 12 character sheets with the average on there and hand them out as pre-gens. This is okay, change what you think is right, or give them some points or whatever. And I could do it that way. You can also double his pre-gens. And that's what I do for monsters. I only deal with the monsters I have. As far as like, if I'm prepping, I will find out what the monsters are or creatures or whatever in the dungeon, in the wilderness, wherever, right. And just, one line stat them. What do they need? They need hit dice, they need hit points, they need AC, they need damage, and don't even list like on the benchmarks here. I put damage 1, damage 2. What it is I'm just listing damage. It doesn't matter what weapon they have. You just list this guy does with one weapon a D6, this guy does one with a second weapon a D4. So you can imagine, you could say when you're going out there, oh, he pulls out his longsword, which does a D6, or a D4, and any other notes down here, special abilities, if they're important. And you don't have to write them down unless they're important. Yes, you get some ridiculous stuff like beholders, which have like, got special abilities up your ass, but usually they only have like maybe one or two special abilities, and just write it down as a bullet point. That's all. Just keep everything simple like that. Okay, I've ran into
that's a good rant, Glenn. And listen, I like to, if I'm doing an adventure, I usually like to add a new creature or a new magic item.
Right.
I like to take my creature. I own a lot of stock art, and I will go through my stock art and I'll go, which one's inspiring me? And I'll find something that inspires me. And then I go, all right, how tough a creature do I want this to be? And I'll go through my Sword of Wizardry rules, and I'll look at the creatures and go, all right, it looks like I want it to be like around, like, oh, this five hit dice creature. And now that's my base for that creature. And I will copy and paste that, and then I'll go through, and I was like, all right, I'm going to tweak the hit dice, tweak the AC, tweak the damage, and then I'm going to change the write-up to reflect the creature that I have. You don't have to start from a blank canvas. Take what's given to you. Others have done the work. Don't let their work be in vain. Use it to inspire yourself. That's right. And that's not being the lazy DM. Or maybe it is.
Oh, but yes, it is.
It's certainly like it serves you better. Because first off, you're building off a creature that you know is already, quote, relatively balanced. So you're not going to have, like, well, I don't know how I did this creature, which has a negative 8 armor class, but only 2 hit dice and does D3 damage. What creature level will that be? How is that going to work? And that is kind of the way you get around that. Work off something that's already balanced in that area. Yes, a plug for J.E. Shield Stockard. I'm a back of his Patreon account. Oh, Patreon. My God.
I am envious of his artistic talent.
I actually own an original piece of work that he did for me of a dwarf, and it is spot on. I didn't ask for it. It was a gift, so thank you, James. His work is inspirational, but I've used it for inspiration, obviously. So when I say it's inspirational, it is inspirational.
Go ahead. No. Yeah. I'm referencing something we talked about earlier. Go ahead.
No.
All right, fine. As far as, like, remember you said you'd use those dungeon cards, and I have the dungeon dice and all that kind of stuff. You put them together. And now, one thing when you're using stuff like that, I know they pack these geomorphs with, like, rooms and corridors and stuff like that. Weed it out. Make something you think fits together, and it's like, all right, I don't need this room, I don't need that corridor. You can't use everything in there because it'd drive you crazy.
But you can whittle it down. They're awesome. Yes.
Yeah, and the dungeon cards are the same way. But what I'm saying,
but the cards I had were actually different. They were actually like tombs. They were actually 3 or 4 rooms on a playing card size.
Okay.
Without details.
But I think you get my gist. I mean, you can't use everything on there because if it fits together. But you can get a nice, like, 10-room dungeon out of that, maybe less.
And remember, folks, when you're using charts, if you're using the Tome of Adventure Design, and you're like, oh my God, all these charts are overwhelming. No, you go through listen, do I roll on them? Often, yes. There are other times I go through it and literally take my finger down the page, down on one column, go down the other, and go, this and this, spot on. That's the inspiration that I need. Now what I need is whatever.
You know what I found out about the Tome of Adventure Design? And it's funny you mentioned, like, you know, making your own monsters, because I found out it's great for making original monsters. I mean, yes, you don't get the stats, but you could probably yank a stat from something close. But at the same time, I came up with some really interesting stuff in there. My favorite one was flying heads that have a buzzsaw on the bottom and shoot fire out of it. It's like statue heads, and they hide them in heads. They hide them in statues, and they're guardians. So all of a sudden, this blade comes out and it's comes off the heads, and their ears, you know, there's start flapping around attacking the characters. It's like, I came up with that just rolling on the monster charts in Tome of Adventure Design.
And that's, it was great. Know, take the inspiration, folks, from wherever you find it. I mean,
that's right.
And you have something, you're like, it's half done. All of a sudden you realize as you're running with your adventure, my God, that head with the chainsaw, that would be a perfect thing to add right in the next room. Drop it in. Until your players have encountered something, it hasn't happened yet. You haven't changed the adventure.
That's right.
You only change stuff if you start retconning it. Like, well, actually, that room that you were just in, I forgot to tell you, there was a pit in there. No.
Oh, you don't say that. But there are certain times in a game where you do have to retcon. But they should be few and far between. Oh, that's a good one, too. Random creature generator.
Creature generator. That's Goodman Thanks. Games. That's an early piece by James Raggy.
I have a copy. I have a printed out copy around here somewhere.
Yeah, I think I have... actually a print copy from I got it way back when I was coming back to gaming I think a lot of us are lapsed gamers that have returned. If you are somebody who's blogging, podcasting, vidcasting, a lot of times you come back and realize what you left, and it becomes even more important to you.
That's right.
More exciting.
That's right. Now Vince for Monster Inspiration, he's always said he looks at Pokemon. So Pokemon's great for monster ideas.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't know he put out it.
No, I didn't know that either.
New version out, huh?
I guess I have the old version.
Yeah, so. I probably do too. But you know, there's stuff like this. I mean, I found, for a while I was using an old Dragon article from like Dragon like 13 or 15 or something that I have on PDF that had a creature generator in it. I was using that for a while.
You know, you got to use what literally works for you. And what's inspirational for me or for Glenn might not be inspirational for you. And what's inspirational for you, sure, I might look at and go, that doesn't do shit for me. It doesn't matter. It's what matters is what works for you. Because if it works for you and inspires your sessions, your games, then it's going to work for your players. And that's really, in the end, what we're looking for, right? We want to have a great experience. And both the DM and the players should leave that table feeling fulfilled. Doesn't mean that everybody succeeded. Doesn't mean the players have or their characters survived. Doesn't mean they achieved their goal.
The point is they remember what happened.
Yes. They should leave there with stories to tell. Sometimes the stories to tell are, holy shit, we got our asses kicked and live to tell about it. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we drove off the dragon, barely surviving, but holy crap, we live to tell about it. Did you get the treasure? Well, the dragon, after we drove him off, we could see was already returning, so we didn't grab nearly as much as we would have liked to, but we do have this from the horde. Well, that's huge.
Even when the characters die, there's something memorable about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
By the way, I don't know if you're all hearing the cats having an interaction through a gate and my dog on the other side of the house saying, stop it, rah, 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 rah.
Oh, those dogs.
Those dogs.
But that's This is the kind of thing I think of when I think of conventions and such, because my standard, if somebody comes, people come up and ask me to run a game, my standard answer is give me an hour. And in that hour, I can usually come up with something. Hey, I don't care what you say about technologies, tablets. I've got all my stuff on PDF on my tablet with me, like basic D&D, AD&D 1E, all the stuff I can look up and just make an adventure right there. Yeah. Grab a piece of graph paper and a pen, and I just start writing.
I mean, that's, I think, the sign or one of the signs of being a skilled DM is that on short notice, you're up and ready and about to go at it. And that's good. And again, I've had more than one time where I did not expect to be running a game and be told, you're running a game.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, well, give me 10 minutes and I'll have something presentable to run.
I'd rather take an hour. But my rule cyclopedia, my basic D&D rule cyclopedia, you know, I've got that denim cover on it with the pocket in front. In that pocket is the Holmes dungeon, the Mensur dungeon. Printed out, and I keep those just in case.
Nice.
And because then I'll always have something to run.
Right. No, that's good. That's I mean, when I go to North Texas, I'll probably break out Inkwell Designs dungeon cards, and have them ready if I need to run. If I don't have something written up before then, at least I'll have something ready to pull out. Because like I said, I'm not going to be on the grid. I'm not going to be like, oh yeah, Saturday at noon. But the truth is, Saturday and Sunday, Rachel's going to be doing her yoga classes from 10 to 5. So is it quite likely that like Saturday and Sunday, I'll be looking to do a pickup game? Quite likely. And it's always
look me up.
There you go.
Look me up. I'll run some. I'll run some more gangbusters. What the hell? Yes, John, you're right. A great idea. Go to dungeon. Yes, you should always have stuff like that in your back pocket. If you're, I mean, you're not saying like every day in your life, but I'm saying if you're out GMing, you should have stuff like that.
Right, and you should have a system that you are comfortable enough with that you can run. I mean, I could run Swordsmithry Light without having the rules at the table. It would be a little hand waving because I might not have the numbers exactly right for some of the creatures, but who cares? As long as you hand wave the same way each time, you got to be consistent when you hand wave when you're improvising. Yeah. Don't be inconsistent with it because your players again will slam you badly. So
John Miller says Frank Mincer supposedly had a default dungeon map that he would reuse for impromptu games, changing the monsters, treasures, traps as needed. Yes, I can attest to that. I was in a game at North Texas with him, and he did that. Now, the one part I have a little trouble with, although I have learned to cope with it over the years, is things like treasure placement. Traps are a little hard, but I can do those. But treasure, it's like I can make a whole dungeon. I can populate it. I can put traps in and stuff. Then we start playing. It's like, oh, crap, I forgot to put any treasure in here. And so I'm frantically looking through the book for stuff. But I've combated that to a certain extent.
Okay.
In your spare time, whatever game you're running, look through the treasure section and jot down a few tasty things you'd like to throw in a dungeon or some other adventure when you want. As far as money goes, I can improvise that. That's easy. But if things like magic items, if I have a small list or something, Astonishing Swordsman, I've got a small list in my GM book where it's like, okay, I'm running a module. The module didn't put, okay, I look ahead and I say, okay, they're going to run into these things. Why don't I put something in there to help them combat it, like a sword? Like, for instance, later on, I know they're going to run into undead. So I planted a sword in there that's +2/+4 versus undead.
Okay.
And they don't know that. They haven't run into it yet. So, you know, that's the kind of thing I do for the treasure. Because treasure, you can improvise to a certain extent, but if, you know, it gets kind of a little touchy-feely.
Well, what I like doing for con games is I like to prep. If I'm expecting 8 players, I will probably prep 10 items. And then for con games, even for home games, I like to avoid over-reliance on the treasure tables of the core books only because the players have all memorized it and that shit. And unique items, especially when you give them out at a convention game, it's like somebody goes, oh, well, I got a, you know, you name it too. So whatever you give them, you know, or it's a ring of spell storing, but the only way the spells get restored is for a member of your party to decease. You don't have to kill them, but if they happen to die in the course of the adventure, that's how you get your spells back in your ring. So what I do, what I have been doing is I had this little different colors. So I was doing one for each convention, and I would fill out ahead of time these magic items. And there's nothing more fun than creating new magic items, especially ones that are not over. Don't do them overpowered. Or if there's a good power, give it a good drawback. Because, yes, they'll enjoy a +1 sword, but they're never going to remember that +1 sword when they go on to their next game. But they're going to remember that ring of spell storing that only got renewed when somebody in the party died. Actually, I think I gave that to Bill Meinhardt's son at my game at GaryCon, and he was doing a very good job at encouraging other player characters to suddenly demise. Not that he did anything directly, just encouraging it to happen. But, I mean, these things are fun. I just unique magic items don't have to be overpowering. Like when we played AD&D back in the day, everyone wanted the fireballs, right? Every paladin wanted the Holy Avenger. You wanted it. I want that +4 defender. I need a sword of sharpness. Now, these are all named items, right? They're not a +2. These are all. So now, what if you could give away, I don't know, 10 cars axe. It's a +1 axe. However, when fighting goblins, it's +4 and does double damage. Who cares? They're goblins. You're going to kill them with one blow anyway. But all of a sudden, right, the player's like, it's a +4 axe against goblins. It does double damage against them. It's something special that they're going to remember. So if you're running a con game and it's your own adventure, think about that. Specialized, unique magic items. It's a lot of fun.
I let people keep their pre-gens, but I don't think they've used them in other games. It's just sort of a souvenir of the game. I haven't heard any stories about people coming back saying, "Oh yeah, I brought this to my regular game and he let it in," and da 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 da. Then again, I've also not had people come back as, "Yeah, I used this pre-gen. I tried to do it in my own game and the guy killed it."
Well, okay.
Yeah, because he hated it.
Well, crap happens, dude.
Yeah, but I never expect to see those characters after my game anyway. I was coming up with new ones.
Doom Bunny, I'm looking for a project that combines writing code and OSR gaming. Most old schools don't like to use their smartphone at the table, so it's hard to figure out what might be useful at a convention. You have to remember, you're saying most old school gamers don't like to use their phone or smartphone at the table. Well, first off, every old school gamer is using their goddamn phone at the table because they're probably going on Facebook or they're checking their email or something else. So you want them to use it for something that's game related.
I either rather crack a book or use my tablet.
Well, here's the other thing too, though. DCC has what's the app for DCC? Oh God, I am so sorry, John. Who's the creator of it? I know you, John. I can't even think of the name of the app you have. Yes, John Moore. He's not right now.
Oh, but, he created the app.
He created the app, and damn, I can't remember the name of the app. Dungeon, is it DCC Crawl or something like that?
Yeah.
No, he's not in here. But here's the thing: it allowed you to roll all the dice, including those crazy D30s, that D24s, D16s. It had all the charts. There are things that you can certainly do beyond just a regular dice roller. I would, I wouldn't be adverse to, as a DM, having something that could randomly generate a small dungeon for me, kind of like the maps that you can get via the one page dungeon by
Purple Sorcerer app.
Purple Sorcerer, thank you. I there we go. I'm getting old. I haven't played DCC in a couple of years, and I own a lot of the stuff. But yeah, Purple Sorcerer, John Marr is
David. David says no phones at my table. I personally, in this day and age, can't see that happening at my table because usually when I'm running something like, say, Astonishing Swordsman, I have the book. Anybody else wants to look stuff up, they have the PDF. Yeah. So, that's why it's there.
It's rough. My suggestion, if you're worried about people being their heads in their phones at the table at a convention game, guess what?
Or any game,
you've got to increase the pace. It's the hardest thing of running a game via VTT is keeping everybody's attention. I'm guilty. Listen, I'm the last person to move my fucking token. You can ask Tim Schwartz and Joe the Lawyer and Matt Jackson and others. Where the fuck is Tenkar? Tenkar is, his brain is still, 30 seconds behind in the encounter, not moving my fucking pog. Distraction. So when you're running a game at a convention, or on a VTT, and somebody is on a VTT, somebody else is doing their work on the side. You want to keep them involved. Keep the action moving. Action right. keeps everything keeps attention. I hate to say okay. that. Yes, random person maker.
By the way, thank you. Here's an app that I've had on like three different phones called Archivist Elements. It is a godsend for GMs, and it's wonderful. And what it is, and also in here, it's got a what am I trying to say? It's got things like deities, items, characters, cards, banners, throwing NPCs to throw out there, names for your NPC, rooms. It's got maps.
Okay.
Like so, you can randomize your own maps, and other things like that. So you know, there's good things. I even got a deck of cards. Give you a plot. You can generate plot hooks and tell it how to do it. It's just a great thing. Archivist Elements is probably one of the oldest apps I have. And that's great for any system, for any fantasy system, because it's generic. Well, but I just wanted to pull it up and tell that, and, you know, I'm not getting any money for it, so just go get it.
Glenn, thank you for whipping that out. Sorry.
No, you're welcome.
Well, I just had to say that, Glenn. For those listening at home, use your imagination. You'll probably be wrong, but yeah, I figured just throw that out there.
I figured I'd plug Archivist Elements while I was here.
No, that's a good plug, man.
I've got another one on there. I can't remember what it is. But that one, if I'm really strapped, I even got it on my tablet. If I'm really strapped, I'll pull that up, and it's like, okay, I need a quick dungeon. Okay, fine. Here's – oh, and the one with the rooms, it's like it tells you what's in the room, and you can, you know, just use it as a wholesale thing. It's not a be-all, end-all, but it's got a lot of stuff in it.
Tools like that, if you're trying to be an improvisational GM, those are the tools that if your improv skills are strong, if you're the Bill Webb of DMing, where Bill Webb will pick up the dungeon literally, I guess, with a shot of whiskey, and then run it right there in front of 20 people, and keep everybody involved. And keep track of everything, and if you're paying attention, you probably will realize that this dungeon is being developed as we go through it. That's a unique skill.
No.
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
Most of us can't. Most of us can't do that. Most of us
strive. I strive for that.
But tools like this are literally that. They're great tools. Don't think of them as a crutch. They're a great tool.
I learned that doing art. It's like no matter how many good brushes or pens you have, it's what you do with them.
Right.
It's the same thing.
You know, a tool that's not used isn't a tool anymore. Okay. It's just an object that is sitting on the side. If you I've been called a tool too. And I call people tools.
But so I'm not a tool anymore because they don't use it.
It's a different context, Glenn. If I call you a tool,
Somebody's using me, then I'm a tool, you know.
Yes, you're such a tool, or a tuck, or a tuk. Maybe you're a tuk. By the way, I don't want to forget this. What? So I was searching on Amazon, and Lord of the Rings stuff came up, and you can get if you have Amazon. Kindle Unlimited? Where you can read all the books, you know, you have like 10 books you take at a time. All the Lord of the Rings trilogy and The Hobbit are all available. However, one step beyond, the Audible versions are also under Kindle Unlimited, which means if you have Kindle Unlimited, if you just pop in for a month and take it, you get the Audible versions, which are professionally read. I just started listening to The Hobbit. It's like 11 hours long, but it's the unabridged Hobbit, right? That's going to be awesome. I remember listening to the BBC audio play. I had it on cassette. My cassette's long died, but I that was like 25 years ago. I might spring for the BBC radio play later, but you can get those, you know, the books. Man, I hope Amazon is. I don't know about the Lord of the Rings on demand series that's coming. I'm just saying, if you want to hear somebody read you The Hobbit, read you Lord of the Rings properly, with the proper British voice, with the proper inflections and all the other fun stuff, professionally read, you can. If you have Amazon Unlimited, you can do so for free. I'll probably mention it on the blog, but I came across that yesterday. I was like, holy crap, this is awesome. So
great. That is great.
Just throwing it out there. So, Glenn, anything else you wanted to touch on today?
Let me think for a minute. I know there's something probably con-related I wanted to talk about. I have a feeling
Glenn and I bathe on a daily basis at conventions, by the way.
So. Yes, we do. So take advantage of it, folks. You can stay around me.
Convention hygiene. Mike and I mentioned this, and somebody got a little bit. Hygiene is important. Okay.
I used to be in the RPGA when the RPGA meant something.
Oh yes, so
we had this one. We had this one rather portly gentleman who was there playing that would come every. Our game store had like once a month. They had a weekend of Living City and Living whatever. And this one guy used to come who never bathed. It got so bad that the guy who would organize the event, his wife was there, and he was totally oblivious to this, but everybody on the other table saw this. He walked up behind him and just took a can of Lysol and sprayed it.
Nice.
And he couldn't figure out why everybody was laughing.
Did he ever return, or did he stay away after that?
I don't know, because I shortly stopped going too, because the RPGA started changing, and you know that was the 3E era, and you know how that goes.
Oh yeah, yeah. I was in the RPGA through the through the 2E era, and
I got my character up to.
I didn't play in the Living City stuff. My one Gen Con though, I did get to play in an RPGA tournament, so I kind of.
I played in Living City, Living Jungle once, and Living Force. Living Force was fun. The D20 Star Wars.
I forgot they did Star Wars. Yeah.
Yeah, D20 Star Wars. It was fun. I got to play a Gungan gambler.
And Misa lose my money.
No, he was one of the fat Gungans. But he had an 18 dex. Everything else kind of sucked, but nobody could hit him with a blaster.
Okay, well, that certainly can be played for a comedic effect.
Oh, yes, it was a lot of fun. But, yeah, remember those days? Yeah, the D20 one, David. Yeah, remember those days? My opinion of third edition finally became, I thought it was great for everything except D&D. I think Star Wars, it worked great. But I didn't like playing third edition D&D.
Fair enough. I mean,
so
when third edition came out, I was excited about it.
I'm sticking to it.
I could see how it came from 2E and the skills and powers books, where it's like 2.5E. But then when they rebooted 3E with 3.5, I was like I no longer have any interest in even reading up on the rules changes. I think I played two sessions of 3E online. I think one was in an AOL chat room of all things. Now I'm really dating myself. Oh my
God. Yes, you are.
Holy yes, you shit. Are. Oh, I might have to like hide underneath the table.
Yeah, but gaming etiquette to me usually boils down to bathe.
Yes, I mean.
I'm sure there's other etiquette.
Yeah, but I mean, listen, we're not talking about 90, 95, 98% of the gaming population. Now, going back to the 90s, it was probably about 1 out of 5 gamers had really poor
hygiene problems.
Hygiene. Now maybe it's 1 in 10, 1 in 20, right? But some people still do. And at conventions is when people who have bad hygiene problems are going to become an issue. I mentioned this before we logged in when I was talking about this with Rach. She still remembers somebody who was hovering around a frog out table a couple of years ago, a larger gentleman who apparently, as the convention progressed, did not bathe. And listen, it could also be that maybe normally you don't bathe it often because you don't sweat that often and you have certain foods that you eat that don't really affect your odor. You're at a convention. Now you're eating all these convention foods, high in grease, right? High, maybe high in spice. Now that's becoming something that's a bit more odorific. And Rach was just like, oh my God, that guy was so, I had to walk away from the table. And I was like, you know, and listen, I'm not pointing fingers at anybody in particular. I'm just saying little self-reflection, you know, listen, I was the kid in like, you know, 10th grade who washed my hair like once a month. And then my nickname was OPEC because the guys thought that it was funny. I was like, OPEC. Oil producing economic countries because my hair was all greasy. Then you wash your hair because you realize that maybe you were missing out on something there, right? So just a little self-reflection. It could apply to anything, all right? Sometimes we have to be our worst critic, and sometimes we have to look at ourselves as a hobby, as a community, and say, hey, at conventions, you've got to be concerned about the people around you too.
That's right.
So it isn't just, you know. So
that is correct, sir.
Oh, I think we've come full circles.
What else? What other etiquette things? Don't spit on your DM's dice or what?
Yes. don't sneeze on your fellow players. I've seen that happen, right. But not at a convention. Oh yeah, my God.
Especially now.
Yeah. Oh God. Yes. Conventions as a rule. Okay. Are not there as, a pickup joint, all right?
True.
They are. True. You know, not saying it doesn't happen, but if you're going there with the idea that you're going to have a partner that you did not come with, get laid, it's not going to go your way. And likely you're more likely to offend somebody with your attempts than you are.
Why run that risk? Why run that risk?
That's why we have bars. Right, late night at your local dive is
where there are hotel. There's hotel bar. The hotel bar.
Yeah, that's a. And I have seen that attempt with somebody who I will not name, but with an advanced degree and a part owner of a gaming company, who was telling people that they were the owner of a game company, and I am a fill in the blank, and I was like, oh my God, this is so disgusting.
Okay, we went far enough for that. I'm always getting drunk and talking gaming stories and getting drunk.
Oh, look at that.
Boy, you did tap out there. Oh, you tapped out.
I can make myself disappear.
Unfortunately, you come back.
I know.
Yeah, but you come back. So
I can't help it.
And if you guys, okay, let me just say this. If you guys are coming to North Texas RPG Con, I will be there. Eric will be there. Other people will be there. You'll see me wearing this hat, my usual old man Grognard hat, and probably my fez.
I don't have a fez.
I have a fez.
I might be wearing like
I'll be wearing my Sons of the Desert fez.
I might wear my Torchlight hat, maybe, but I think it's a little incognito.
I might wear my Lesser Gnome hat.
Oh, don't make me dig out my Lesser Gnome hat.
Oh, I'll go right up to Zach and say, hey, I remember.
Do you remember when you were a Lesser Gnome and not a frog? Before you were a frog, you were a gnome.
That's right. Dun, dun. But he won't be, him and Raish won't be at the table because there's no table. Are you going to go invade, say, Bad Mike's table or something?
Oh, I'm sure if Bad Mike needs to get spelled for a bit, I'll go over there and be like, hey, Mike, you know.
I mean, just I used to do that. He doesn't do that anymore with me. You don't let me watch the table at all.
He has his grandkids sucking up for working for Dr. Pepper and food right now.
True.
Yes, Pepper's Farms remembers.
But I'll be running a game. Eric will be running something, I guess.
Off the grid. Off the grid, definitely. Yeah. You will not find me on the North Texas. Listen, if you look at the North Texas RPG Con
schedule,
you see there's a lot of tables that are open for open gaming. So I might make one of those open gaming tables at Ten Cars Tavern. Unofficial meeting place, but we are going to have and Glenn. I you're not there Wednesday night. Shit, I think Wednesday night is going to be the bad alcohol brought by Chris Stodgill live stream.
Oh well. I will be there. You know, all 4 days. With Gage, my grandson.
Yeah, we'll have more bad. We'll
probably get a lot more gaming in than I will.
Yeah, we'll have some more bad alcohol live streams, I'm sure, the one.
I'm sure. But, you always grab me if I'm walking by or something, if I'm not involved in a game. I'll be probably maybe running or playing stuff, too. I noticed there's another Boot Hill game, which I'm going to avoid. Boot Hill's a nice system, but it's just not mine. Well, 2 years ago, me and my buddy Steve Perrin, got hooked into a Boot Hill game, which took forever to finish because of the combat system.
You know, yeah, it's a little tedious.
Gage came up twice to hit me for money. It's like,
Hey,
Grandpa, are you still playing this?
Yeah. That game cost you. Yeah. You don't need a game that's going to cost you deep in the pockets like that.
Well, it cost me deep in the pockets anyway. It cost me a lot of time, though. I think I was there for 5 hours.
Oh,
it took four of them to do the gunfight. It took four of them to do the gunfight.
Yeah, a bit too much for me.
Yeah.
We are actually going to hit, I think, the 90-minute mark.
That's what I usually shoot for.
I shoot at the hip. The 90 minutes.
I think next time we should have a guest or something. What do you think?
If we can try to get a guest. I know that Mike and I are going to have some guests on Wednesday nights because it's going to be lead up to North Texas. So we're getting special guests from the con to be special guests on the Wednesday night live stream. But we could also get guests for this.
I can be a guest on the Wednesday night live stream, but that's all right. Yeah, we could. I was trying to get Jason Saturno on here, the guy who runs my Saturday one game, the guy in Long Island.
Right.
But he says he's shy. So. I just want it on as like a typical GM, you know? He's nobody famous. He's just, we play the Saturday game. He runs it. I want to get a typical GM's, view on this or something.
Right. But he's a little bit beyond the typical since he runs a game in person and
not anymore.
He had
to go online because like 3-4 weeks ago somebody caught COVID and so everybody went in his house and everybody went online. But still he's been running games for a long time. Maybe I can talk him into it. We'll see. Or if anybody else you can think of, Jeff Delaney wouldn't be, but hey Jeff.
I think Jeff is lined up for Wednesday. I don't know if we can double dip on him.
Okay, well, it's a thought. I mean, we already had Mark on, so anyway, we'll figure it out, folks.
Sounds like a plan.
Me too. Are about ready?
I think so, folks. I guess it's gonna be the normal boilerplate at this point, but neither Glenn nor I are. Medical professionals. So the advice we're giving is use your common sense in the world of COVID. You can't help others. You can't keep others safe if you yourself are ill. So just use your common sense. You know.
I wish we had a scroll we could just scroll up in front of us.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I can make a banner for it, Glenn. I can make a banner.
Make a banner and also say the opinions of Glenn Hallstrom do not reflect.
Reflect those. Yes, we are not medical professionals. Well, it's a disclaimer because it's true. We're not. Folks, be safe, be well. God bless you all. Roll those dice. Roll them well. And I don't know if you're playing a game that requires low dice rolls, well, that's on you. You know, recruit Tim Short because he likes to roll low anyway.
That's true.
Knock on wood. I will be back again tomorrow night with my lovely wife, Rach. We'll be doing Gamers Health, 8 p.m. Eastern.
Good night, folks.
Good night, folks.
Bye-bye.
Stay out of troubles, maybe.